The next case is 98-2010, Melinda Hart versus the City of Cleveland Heights. Ms. St. John.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the Court, my name is Kathleen St. John. I am counsel for the plaintiff appellant, Melinda Hart, the administratrix of the estate of Ruth Brewer, deceased. I have a number of people with me today that I would like to introduce to the Court. My co-counsel, Mr. Richard Dempsey, also sitting here in the front row, first in line is the deceased sister, Dolores Dudley, who flew in today from St. Louis, Missouri. The plaintiff, Melinda Hart. Ruth Brewer, the deceased, was an active member in the Zion Chapel Ministry Baptist Church. And we also have here today a member of the Board of Deacons, Mr. Riley Cotton, and the pastor of the church, Reverend George Stewart. This case involves a very tragic and preventable accident that resulted in the plaintiff's decedent's death. In one afternoon in September of 1995, the deceased Ruth Brewer was driving on Lee Boulevard in Cleveland Heights when suddenly and entirely unexpectedly to her, a very large portion of a wild cherry tree came falling down on Lee Boulevard, crushing her windshield, causing her serious injuries, and ultimately resulting in her death.
Let me just stop you there on the facts. There was a reference made in one of the briefs that the limb hit a light post, and the light post, I took it, possibly fell in the car. The limb hit the car. Is that?
The limb hit the car, yes. The light post was bent, but it didn't fall.
With the 19-foot split and the 42 to 45 foot estimate of the branch, would there have been any way logistically or geographically that limb could not have been overhanging the street? Anyway.
Well, I think there's a factual dispute in the record. And the reason there's a factual dispute is because it is our expert who testified that the portion was 43 feet long.
I understand.
Unfortunately, at the time that the limb was in the street, no one measured it, so we don't have an exact estimate. I think it's the city's position that it might not have been that long. However, it is undisputed. Or let me put it this way. Our expert testified that it would have reached well into the roadway, and even the defendant's expert conceded that the probability is that at least branches and twigs and leaves, I think.
In its growing state?
In its growing state, yes.
Okay. Now, does that change the, quote, sovereign immunity law one way or the other?
I don't believe so. I believe that the proximity of the tree to the street, its hazardous condition, and the foreseeability, in fact, the great likelihood that it would fall onto the street when it came down, and it was destined to come down, renders it, at least a jury question of whether it's a nuisance, whether or not it's actually overhanging the roadway.
Okay, now ruling for you, reversing this case and sending it back for trial, whatever we do, ruling for you, does that then place an obligation on every municipality to continuously check forests and trees and other, quote, nuisances abutting streets? When I was a Toledo City Councilman, I had 1,000 miles of streets I was responsible for.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that every day?
Well, I don't believe that a ruling in our favor would necessitate daily or weekly inspections of every single tree. The restatement provision that we cited in our brief talks about the general duty of a landowner to prevent hazardous portions of trees from falling onto the street. So, I mean, every property owner has this duty.
Are you willing to draw the line at known or should have known?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
When the inspector saw this tree,
yes,
he indicated that it was for a, I think, priority pruning.
Yes.
Was the condition that caused the limb finally to fall, was that condition present or obvious on that inspection?
Both experts agree that had they been present at the inspection 6 months prior to this incident, they would have detected something about the tree from their position on the ground. Our expert testifies that the city forestry employee also should have been able to detect that condition. It is also agreed by both experts that the condition, which was a cracking at a decrotch formation in the tree, was in existence for a good 2 years prior to this incident. And again, our expert testified that it should have been observable to the city forestry people at least a year prior to the incident, but at the very least at the inspection in March, 6 months before this incident. And I think that's the point. The two points that Your Honor's raised are the critical facts here. We have a condition that was observable. We have an inspection that was actually performed, at which point in time this tree was marked for priority prune, and had that been done, this accident never would have occurred.
The priority prune was not at all related to the crack that happened with the side away from the road.
Yes.
So had they done the priority prune, which is not working the other way to get that section, they wouldn't have even threatened.
I agree that that is the testimony of the city forestry employee. I believe that when you have self-serving testimony such as that, it's subject to a credibility determination by the trier of fact. But I don't believe that it said why he marked it for priority prune. I think that was his elaboration when he was deposed.
Could this be a fact that we don't know that if they would have done the pruning that was suggested or recommended, that this would have been detected, this additional problem would have been detected? Isn't that a fact?
It's a factual dispute.
We don't know.
Sure.
We don't know. However, there's enough evidence in the record for a trier of fact to determine that that particular condition should have been observed. And returning to Justice Lundberg-Stratton's question, if the trier of fact is to believe the testimony of the city forestry employee, they could still find that the city had constructive notice at that time, because by doing the inspection of this particular tree 6 months before the incident, and again, both experts believe that had they been there, they would have observed this condition, and the plaintiff's expert testified that the city forestry employee should have been able to observe it at that time. So even if there isn't actual notice, at the very least, there is a question of fact as to constructive notice.
Was this a routine inspection, or was something brought to their attention that they sent someone out because of a complaint or because of a condition that they thought was dangerous? So was it routine?
It was essentially routine. There was no complaint as to this particular tree. However, the testimony in the record was that the reason the city forestry employee targeted this particular tree was because they had been instructed to look for trees that could present a risk of harm both to pedestrians in the park as well as to traffic on the roadway. So it was routine, but it was also routine with a mission. They were looking for problems.
They made a judgment that in their observation, this tree presented or could have presented a problem for the
yes.
roadway.
Yes, absolutely.
The trial court granted summary judgment here, and if it were simply a routine negligence case or a wrongful death case based on negligence, irrespective of the concepts of sovereign immunity.
Right.
I don't think anyone would quarrel with your viewpoint that there was, you know, there was a good case here to go to a jury on negligence.
Right.
But that's not what we have. You know, we have a case that we really have to narrow. It was a judgment call in the law with regard to what is a nuisance under the law of sovereign immunity. What
right.
duties does the city have? So
right.
to that extent, you know, a lot of the argument we've heard so far is really directed at negligence as opposed to the law of nuisance and the limited liability of cities for this sort of...
Right.
Okay.
Yes, and I thank you for raising that. Did you have a further question,
yes.
or should I just address that?
I'd like you to address the nuisance
okay.
issue.
I would refer to this court's holding in 1992 in the Manufacturers National Bank versus Erie County Road Commission. I think what's important here is the courts below used an artificial analysis that analytically had been rejected in the Manufacturers National Bank case. In that case, this court held that you don't look to the nature of the condition itself. You don't ask, is this a cornfield, is this a tree, is the tree hanging too low? Instead, you look at the effect that the condition has on the safety to the motoring public lawfully using the roadway. And if you look at it from that perspective, I think that you have to reach the conclusion that the lower court's rulings were wrong.
And the focus, though, is, and that's where I need your help, is the focus is on the roadway. The argument, of course, is that the impeding traffic, and the question, I guess, becomes then, this limb, whether it overhung the roadway or not, eventually it did obviously fall upon the roadway,
right.
whether this limb was a nuisance prior to the time it fell.
Well, I think it was a nuisance in that it was pregnant with risk prior to falling, in the same way that a muffler on the roadway...
But see, that's a threat of, you know, I guess. I don't know how we'll sort that out, because it is, everything, I mean, other automobiles that might crash into you could be, you know,
well,
a nuisance or...
But the city would have to have knowledge for a sufficient period of time with respect to whatever the nuisance is, to be able to abate that nuisance.
And that's the question with the limb. It's not that they had knowledge that that limb would fall. They had knowledge of a condition that potentially, over time, might cause it to fall.
Well, I think that taking the evidence most favorably to the plaintiff's position, there was a very strong probability. The rock in that kind of cherry tree is known to progress very rapidly.
But they didn't have evidence of rot, did they? They had evidence that it should be pruned because there were some dead limbs. Did we have evidence of rot?
Well, once again, what the city forestry employee testified was that there were some dead leaves and branches on the other side of the tree. But again, we're looking at constructive notice. And both of the experts agreed that there was a serious fracture in the tree that was affecting a substantial weight-bearing limb. And had the city properly detected that condition,
that's it. Mm-hmm.
But then that's constructive notice. And we have two experts.
But it did mean, didn't it, counsel? It meant that they, because it was 25 feet up, they observed it only from the ground. Had they then gone up, I suppose it requires that your constructive notice includes the proposition that in order to have fulfilled the duty, they needed to get up there and see the extent of this? Because wasn't that all determined after the accident?
That was determined after the accident. I think that our expert's testimony is very clear in saying that they could have determined that from the ground.
Uh-huh.
The opponent's expert was a little more uncertain about that, but he admitted that he, had he been present, would have saw something with that tree that would have caused him to look very hard at that tree.
But nobody knew about the rot.
There is no testimony that anyone actually knew about the rot. Again, with respect to nuisance, I think the Manufacturers National Bank case is clear that it has to, that if it's a condition that's likely to affect the safety of the roadway traffic, that it is at least a jury question as to whether there's a nuisance. I think, again, addressing Justice Cook's question, the case law for the, from this court, dating back to the 30s, has held that nuisances don't have to be something confined to the roadway itself. 1939, the Yackee versus City of Napoleon case was the first time that this court said the nuisance can come from overhead as well as on the roadway. Now, that was a train trestle bridge that, in a particular circumstance, constituted a clearance hazard. But once again, until that beer truck with the plaintiff, decedent, sitting on top, rode under there, there wasn't necessarily a problem, although I should correct myself. I believe in that case there was complaints prior to.
Your red lights are on, but I have a question. How are you doing? We can come back up for 3 seconds. Chief, we do and I guess you can't read our decisions. I'm not saying sovereign immunity at all. My position will stay clear. At the same time, trees are part of the quality of life, particularly in urban communities, tree lined streets, and all of that. And I'm having difficulty imagining what the scope of this case says. I just hear the rumbling of chainsaws in the back of my mind. City law directors, we take, if we go where you want us to go, we'll take that, some of us, and send out the work crews to start cutting down the tree lawns all over this the state.
I don't, Your Honor, with all due respect, I don't believe that would be the result here. The City of Cleveland Heights had a tree inspection program in place. They were already looking out for this kind of hazard, and they were negligent in failing to properly abate it. But more importantly, if you look at the reverse of that, if this court does affirm the decisions below, it's sending a message to all municipalities that it doesn't matter how dead and rotting and dangerous your trees are that abut the roadway, and even if every person in their right mind would say that tree is coming down and it's coming down on the roadway, you don't have a duty to take care of it. And I think that's a much worse message than the potential that people will err on the side of caution. I think that we all appreciate tree-lined streets, but this is a condition that could have been discovered and could have been prevented, and at least a trier of fact could have determined that.
Thank you, Mr. John.
Thank you.
Mr. Gibney. Let me start you with a question. Two questions. One on the, both of them going to the Court of Appeals opinion. This is summary judgment case, as you know. It seems to me that reading the Court of Appeals opinion that it weighed the evidence, that there is a fair amount of dispute here over whether this crack in the crotch of the tree should have been observed, whether it was observed, and where the tree limb actually was before it fell, how far over the road it was. That's my first question, and the other is that it seems to me the Court of Appeals is saying that on the law, that if there is a nuisance by something overhanging the roadway, it has to actually hang down into the traffic so that, so let's take a very large dead branch tree that's been dead for 2 years. Nobody, you don't have to be an arborist to know that. Large branch hanging over the roadway 25 feet up, is that a nuisance, I guess? In the Court of Appeals law, it seems to me that would not be a nuisance. Now, what's your response to this?
I think that the Court of Appeals did take that position. And I think it was based upon past precedent. It was based upon an understanding of what the Court of Appeals believed the legislature's intent was. And I believe it was actually a correct statement, an understanding of the legislature's intent to limit immunity to obstructions that are actually in the road. But
Wouldn't a large dead branch on a tree be every bit as much of a threat to the safety of the road, let's say, as a muffler maybe. I mean, you don't know when it's going to fall, but you know it's going to fall sometime, and there may be a car there. So it seems to me that wouldn't that be a nuisance, or does it actually have to be? Does there actually have to be something in the roadway at the time? I mean, the auto hits it.
Well, the trial court of appeals took the position, and I think rightly, that it was the legislature's intent in giving this very limited exception to immunity for maintenance of the right way, because of course the general rule is that there is immunity. And there's a limited exception that the legislature has given, and that is for obstructions that are within the right-of-way that the city either knew about or are so obvious that they couldn't be ignored, so that the knowledge will be imputed to the city. That was the court's understanding. But my main point in this, really, and it's really the only point in many respects that I want to make to this court, is that that is not this case. That is the case that you, Chief Justice Moyer, have posited, which is a dead branch that clearly is dangerous, that everybody knows about, that everybody recognizes, the city has knowledge of it, has been told about it, or it is so obvious that the law will impute knowledge to the city through constructive notice. In that situation, that's a different situation, and I can see that that situation might trouble this court, and it might cause this court to look again at what the legislature had in mind when it granted this limited exception. But that's not this case. This case is simply a negligent inspection case. I think that the plaintiffs are attempting to make it a nuisance case, and they're doing a good job in their argument, but it's not. At base, it's a negligent inspection case. The only evidence, of course, it has to be construed most favorably for the plaintiffs. The only evidence that the plaintiffs have construing it most favorably for them is an expert who has said that he believes that the city employee who made the inspection should have seen the crack. That's a negligent inspection case. That's not a nuisance case. A nuisance case is where there is a problem, a hazard, which is so obvious that the city either knew about it or it's so obvious that they can't conceivably not have known about it. And therefore, the law will impute knowledge through constructive notice to the city. But that's not a situation, that is a nuisance situation, is not a situation where an inspector arguably made a mistake.
So nuisance can't be constructive notice of a threat of danger. That's essentially what the plaintiffs argue here, is that there's constructive notice of a threat of danger based on a negligent inspection, I suppose.
But in order to have constructive notice, I don't think it's a jury question under the facts that we have in this case. In order to have constructive notice for a jury to even consider that, you've got to be in the ballpark. You've got to have a situation which is open, which is obvious, be it a threat, a hazard, or a nuisance, that is so obvious that even though there is no direct testimony that the city knew about it, because the inspector has admitted that he knew about it, or there has not been.
I don't know if that can be the test to make it as a matter of law. You need to have, in order to prevail here on appeal, this has to be as a matter of law that would support summary judgment. Your position seems to be that it's a gradation of obviousness from this end to this end of a continuum, and you must be at this end of the continuum in order to have a case that gets to a jury.
I'm saying that the facts in this case, construed most favorably for the plaintiff, would not support a finding by a jury of constructive notice, because constructive notice imputes notice to the city because the problem is so obvious that nobody could have missed it.
So you're saying that to have a nuisance, you must have more than negligence, you must have willful and wanton misconduct.
Well, I don't know that it has to be willful and wanton, it has to be heading that way, but it has to be so obvious that the city couldn't have missed it.
Well, where between negligence would you say is not enough, and where is it that you have to have? You say negligence is not enough. What do you have to have then?
It has to be so obvious that
the condition has to be obvious.
That the trier of fact is able to say.
No, I'm not talking about the condition of the tree. I'm talking about the activity of the city. You say that the city can be negligent and not be held liable for a nuisance, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to know what activity by the city it takes to make it liable for a nuisance.
It takes an obvious condition that it simply ignores. It takes, for example, the neighbors. This was in, for example.
Do you have to have evidence that someone talked to the city manager and said that limb's going to fall? It looks really bad. It's leaning way over. Aren't you going to do something about it? And so do you have to have, well, the city manager says, nah, that's baloney. I'm not going to fix that. That's nothing. No. Is that enough?
That would be very helpful. Another possibility would be that the people who are traveling up and down the street see it. For example, that other people who were employed by the city have gone by it, have seen it, noticed it, and are aware that it's a dangerous condition.
Your position, as I see it, is actual knowledge, ignoring that actual knowledge for a set period of time, and then injury to create the nuisance. I mean, they have to have absolute knowledge. You have to show that they ignored that and that injury resulted.
Well, no, I'm saying that there is a doctrine of imputing knowledge. But I'm saying that...
All right, so you'd make it at least maybe even constructive knowledge.
Yeah, constructive knowledge is imputing knowledge. It's saying that this condition is so obvious and there have been so many complaints about this that we'll impute knowledge to the city.
Okay, now let's leave the knowledge thing for a minute and let me ask you this question, the one that keeps bothering me in all these cases. If this lady had been driving by my home and the tree limb had fallen from my yard and gone through her windshield and caused her death, and the representative of her estate came into your office to bring an action against me for her death, would you take the case?
Yes.
So the only distinction here is it's the city.
And whether this court agrees with it or not, that is the position that the legislature of this state has taken.
Well, arguably.
I don't think on this issue there's any question but that they have said that there is immunity for maintenance of the streets with a limited exception.
Setting aside the summary judgment issue and the knowledge issue and all of that, your position simply is we never go any further at all because cities are immune from their kind of negligence. The rest of us all have to respond, but cities are this great metropolis that has no responsibility to anybody because the General Assembly says they're godlike in nature.
Obviously, Your Honor, that's not so. We do have liability in many situations.
Only through the exceptions.
Which is why I frequently before this court has our all law records. We have lots of liability. But what the legislature has said is that with respect to maintenance of the roadway, let me take it back to Justice Cook. We're starting to focus in on the nuisance
See, you're down to the fact only because it's a city. The city can hurt you.
I understand where the
city can hurt you.
You need to draw the reason I think these parts of the city is just all through a field. It's really not a challenge to do the statute. You're really not arguing about the sovereignty of the statute. You're arguing the lower such that with the plaintiff put on and out of the
some conference. Money.
Yes, I think that was right.
And the entry of the trial is very good. She says, she starts out by saying, after saying she's correct, summary, The deteriorating tree limb in question.
You the absolute.
So she apparently accepts that the relevant focus is on the effect of the obstruction on the highway safety and not on the nature of the obstruction. But then she goes on to explain the reasoning by focusing really on nature's other obstruction. She says that, you know, nobody gave me any tree limb cases. The only one they gave, the limb was so low that it's hard hitting it when they drove by. I assume in that category would also be tree limbs hanging over stop signs and cause traffic accidents and those kinds of things. So while she says the relevant focus in determining whether or not there's a nuisance is on the effect on highway safety, it appears that she really is deciding it on what she says is no issue is the nature of the obstruction.
I think the position that the trial court took was affirmed by the Court of Appeals, and there were several bases upon which my opinion anyway could have granted summary judgment for us. And the position they took was that under the current case law and the statements of the legislature, that was the legislature's intent that if this limb or whatever it was not actually impeding the flow of traffic, so it wasn't within the flow of traffic, that we had immunity, that it was not within the exceptions. I'm suggesting that we need not reach that issue here because the other basis upon which summary judgment would have properly been granted was that this is simply a negligent inspection case. There is not a sufficient threshold of evidence to throw this into the nuisance category. The only evidence the plaintiff has in this case is that their expert feels that the tree inspector should have seen that crack when he looked at it 6 months before the accident. This accident was as unexpected to us as it was to the blackboard in the case. We did not, but we had no knowledge.
Doesn't one present a pretty strong argument that they have laid out a sufficient amount of evidence put in to get the level of a jury question on whether or not this is a nuisance. The jury gets to have the judge on the law on nuisance. They get to listen to all the tree experts that are used by the brain. It seems it's following up on what other justices have asked. If you're asking us to say, as a matter of law, it can't be a nuisance if it wasn't. So it wasn't an obvious that the mayor, every time you drove down the street,
There are all kinds of nuisance cases, Your Honor, where the city takes inspections with the old times. If this court holds that there is enough evidence in this case for this to go before a jury on negligence, if I were representing plaintiffs in any inspection case in the city, such as housing inspections, for example, I would think that situation, the inspector didn't see, was a nuisance, so that I could get it in front of the jury. And that is not the law. The law is that the city is not liable for negligence inspections. It is liable if there is a nuisance, it knows about it, and it ignores it. And the law will permit an imputation of knowledge to the city if there are sufficient facts to warrant it. This case doesn't get into that law.
So if the tree had been standing there, not leaking out for 3 years in a row, the smaller branches, dead trees do, the little branches fall off first and keep crumbling down. At that point, it is.
It's a nuisance for which the city would be liable if they had chopped the tree down.
I'm not sure that I understand the question.
Well, I mean, are you saying because it was still leaking out, it doesn't get to the point of open and obvious? Where if it's a tree in the middle of summer, it has no leaves on it, it's, you know, the city's on notice.
The expert says that the problem, the defect, the nuisance, was a crack in the crotch of that tree. Our inspector says he looked at the tree, he saw some dead wood, he did not see that crack.
But aren't we arguing about facts? It's not this out.
We are, and frankly, I think the plaintiff is trying to confuse the situation to make what is just a negligent inspection into a nuisance case by arguing a lot of facts. And I am simply saying that if you look at every fact that's in the record that supports the plaintiff's case, the best facts they've got is an expert that said there was a negligent inspection. That inspector should have seen that correctly.
Well, don't you have to also say that let's assume the inspector is correct and there was a crack in the crotch of the tree, that is not a nuisance. Let's accept that as a fact. There's a crack in the crotch of the tree and the branch is very soft because it doesn't touch it. That has to be your conclusion, does it not? Because there is evidence. The disputed evidence is over whether anyone saw the crack, and therefore the city is on notice that the tree is a danger.
Yeah, I think the real dispute is whether this possibly could be imputed, this knowledge, to the city because it was so open. But my point is that as a law director dealing with this for many years, that there is a body of law that deals with nuisances. There's a body of law that deals with negligent inspections. They're different creatures. A nuisance is an open hole in a street that is obvious. A negligent issue would be a street where you've got the street wasn't properly constructed. The city didn't know about it. It sent an inspector out and looked at it. The inspector didn't see it. A piece of the street falls off and a car goes off the side. The city isn't liable for that because the nuisance didn't occur until that half of the street.
And my question is to restate it. Is there no point in time in which you over the tree transformed himself from
I think there possibly could. That's not his case.
But where that is true,
no. Where that tree is out there, it clearly is dangerous. The city has knowledge of it. It doesn't do anything within a reasonable period of time about it. Then maybe we've got some sort of a nuisance situation, although I would argue that the legislature intended not to include the overhang tree exception. I would see
it doesn't affect your argument that the while you say this was a negligent inspection. Yet the inspector had ranked this a rather high priority for the city to look at this tree. This doesn't affect your argument at all. You don't think that makes any difference and raises questions of fact?
No. For two reasons. One is that the testimony in the record and the depositions is what's meant by priority proof. It wasn't considered an emergency situation that was dangerous to health or safety, or it would have been listed as emergency proof. The second is that I think was already pointed out that the inspectors testified that, and also our experts testified that the dead branches that were referred to that needed to be pruned were those which were on the Forest Hill Park side of the tree, not the limb that had the crack. The limb that had the crack really wasn't dead. It didn't have dead branches and material. There was simply a crack there that suddenly opened up on that day that it held.
Would the emergency pruning change your mind?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's versus dealing with
would that then make it a nuisance?
Branch, but certainly if the inspector...
That would make it a nuisance then?
If the inspector had seen it, that was the testimony, that the inspector had seen this and that he was aware of the crack and he was aware of the danger that this would cause of the tree limb falling on the roadway, then that would be a very different case.
And ordered it to be done in an emergency way, but then was negligently not done.
Well, I can see that might possibly present this case, but for purposes of city administration...
No. Would the negligence of not having it pruned be enough for a nuisance?
If, in fact,
is a nuisance and a serious hazard, and the city knew about it, and it didn't do anything about it, then we're in nuisance jurisprudence. There's no question about that. And as a law director, I don't have a problem with that. It is that this court decided that tree limb, although it was not in the middle of the street, that you're going to, what I consider to be, expand the concept of the exception. You know, if it's limited to truly nuisance situations where we know about a situation, it's been called to our attention, and we do nothing about it, that limits us. But if we're going to be liable for any charge of not seeing something, not seeing a crack in a tree, we've got hundreds and hundreds of thousands of trees in the city of Cleveland. I saw 55,000 residents that we win an award every year as being a tree city. And that puts really a very difficult burden.
Thank you, Mr. Gibbon. Ms. St. John, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm not sure what to address in that 30 seconds, except that I think two things. The city has now backed off from the proposition of law that is set forth in its brief. It's now come down to a factual argument. And Mr. Gibbon has offered a determinative factor as being whether this is so obvious that nobody could have missed it. I mean, that's a factual kind of analysis that's going to require the court in each instance to analyze the evidence of record and make that determination first. I don't think it's a workable test, and it basically conflicts with the test that this court earlier set forth in the Manufacturers National Bank case. That's the correct statement of the legislature's intent according to this court. And again, Mr. Gibbons' test is a fact-intensive inquiry that I don't know of any law that supports that.
But isn't it the intent of the legislature that this type of situation be open and notorious before the city even gets into the picture?
Well, I think that the evidence...
Sounds like this is hidden. It sounds like that you have to get up on a ladder
up 45
feet. Well, this is after the fact. Those people didn't inspect the tree before it fell, did they?
No.
Okay. So they're assuming facts that they did not observe. It seems like this might have been observable if you got up into the tree, but really it's something that doesn't amount to what we think a nuisance is.
Your Honor, to take that position, you have to make a credibility determination about our expert. When our expert says the forestry employee should have been able to see this from the ground in March of 1995, You're going to have to look at that testimony and say, no, our expert is wrong.
No, all I'm saying is, should there be more evidence for a nuisance than for a negligent act? That's all I'm saying. You have to say yes.
I don't think that that's a workable determination. I mean, constructive notice is constructive notice. I don't think it's a different constructive notice for purposes of nuisance. A nuisance is a condition that affects the safety of the roadway for traffic using the regularly traveled portions of the roadway. That's the focus. So as an evidentiary matter, whether the city has constructive notice, and you use your state level, will reasonable lines differ on this issue when presented with it?
It sounds like you're saying, I don't know what a nuisance is, but I see it, would I know it when I see one?
No, I'm saying that I think that reasonable lines could go either way on this issue, and the city should properly be making these factual, intensive arguments to a jury. We respectfully request that this court reverse, therefore.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.